Arctic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos. We're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And I have some truly amazing news that I'm about to get into here in just a moment. But first, I want to remind all of you once again, grab your calendar and mark down July 19th, 2015 as a day you want to spend with me in Asheville, North Carolina. I will have all the details solidified for you soon, but what I can tell you is it's going to start around 1 p.m., we're thinking, and I have a lot of cool stuff arranged during the day, and then a private cocktail party, and then some fun stuff that evening, and it's going to be very affordable, and it's going to be so fun and so special that you should buy a plane ticket wherever you happen to be in the world and fly to Asheville to be a part of this. I will tell you, hopefully on next week's show, more details. But again, July 19th of 2015, mark that down, set it aside to do something really cool that will, it's only going to happen once, it will never happen again, and it's something that's never happened before, all right? So, that said, let me get into this story that I mentioned last hour and why that something, why this is so important. You know, this, and you may have heard bits and pieces of this, but it just didn't quite set in. It didn't click just why this is as important as it is. It starts with something that you probably heard about if you have been involved in UFO research for any length of time. It starts with what is called the Rendlesham Forest Incident. Now, let me go ahead and give you a refresher on what the Rendlesham Forest Incident was. This was something that happened in late December of the year 1980. There were some incredible reports of sightings at Rendlesham Forest, which is in England, by U.S. servicemen. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Rendlesham Forest, okay? It is owned by the Forestry Commission there in England. It is about 5.8 square miles of coniferous plantations. There is some wetland there. And the incident known as the Rendlesham Forest Incident, it occurred in the vicinity of two military bases that were there at the time. Now, these bases are no longer active. The bases there, known as the RAF Bentwaters, is just to the north of the forest, and RAF Woodbridge extends into the forest from the west. Now, at this time in 1980, these two military bases were being used by the United States Air Force. If you are a historian, you might find it interesting that they were under the command of Wing Commander Colonel Gordon E. Williams. Now, there was a period of time there when something truly incredible occurred. And the main events of the incident, which included some kind of landing or landings of UFOs, it took place there in the forest. Essentially, the men on the Air Force started getting all of these calls about weird lights. And, in fact, one of the men there on the base commander, Colonel Ted Conrad, he, and I'm reading this almost verbatim here, he recalls that five of the Air Force policemen one night spotted lights from what they thought
was a small plane descending into the forest. Now, obviously, this is a big deal if you're on an Air Force base in England and it looks like a plane has landed near the base, but it's unaccounted for, right? This is a big deal. You got to check this out. So two of the Air Force policemen went out into the woods at night to see what had landed. They're on foot, okay, in the woods, and they came upon a large craft mounted on tripods. That is to say, it had three legs, sitting there in the middle of the dark forest. It had no windows, but it was studded with brilliant red and blue lights. And each time the men came close, within 50 yards of the ship, supposedly it would levitate about 6 feet into the air and back away some. So they followed it for almost an hour through the woods and across a field until it took off at phenomenal speed. They zipped away. The next morning, acting on reports made by these men, Colonel Conrad went out to investigate, and he said that he went into the forest and he sure enough located a triangular pattern apparently made by the tripod legs in the dirt, and he interviewed a lot of the witnesses. Well, now, two of these guys who went out there and were involved in this were named Jim Peniston and John Burroughs. And in 2007, Jim Peniston went on Larry King Live on CNN, and he claimed that he did a 45-minute investigation of the craft so close that he claims he was able to touch it. Now, that's kind of weird because I just told you that when they would get close to it, it would back away. He said that there was one opportunity where it did not do this, and he was able to go up and touch this thing. The other guy, John Burroughs, said, "I didn't touch it," says, you know, basically, this thing was scary. And, you know, there were points where we would just hit the ground and this thing would fly up into the trees. So that said, this has been one of the most interesting incidents since 1980 because we're talking about, you know, servicemen. Now, here's the new breaking news. All right. This guy, Airman First Class John Burroughs, who encountered that UFO at close proximity that night, has claimed that he was actually receiving some kind of radiation from this craft that has caused health problems for him. And he went to the VA, the United States Veterans Administration, and said, "I want you to pay to have me treated for the problems, the health problems I have that were created by this radiation." Okay? Now, initially, the government tried to ignore him, but he got John McCain involved, Senator John McCain. And John McCain apparently helped this man. And so now, he's had heart problems and all kinds of other things. Amazingly enough, the VA, the United States Veterans Administration, which deals with the medical care for veterans, has agreed to treat this man, John Burroughs, for the health problems that he has had from coming into contact with the radiation from this craft. In fact, he was in need of a life-saving heart surgery that he claimed was from what he was exposed to when he came into contact with this thing. His lawyer has actually said that this is a de facto admission by the U.S. government that UFOs exist and can cause, quote, physical injury, end quote. So Burroughs has said, and I'm reading a quote by him, "I was not looking for anyone to believe me. All I have been concerned about was getting care for my illness. That was all that mattered," end quote. Now, he says that when he got close to this strange silver craft, that it was covered in symbols which resembled hieroglyphics. And that reminds me of some of the stories about the Roswell crash. But they say that his big problems, and he'd had all kinds of illnesses over the years that seemed to be similar to radiation exposure, but his real problem started in 2011 when doctors were astonished after one of his heart valves had failed. And they say this is something which usually happens to men a lot older than Burroughs, who's only 50 years old. And he started going downhill quickly, and so that's when he got John McCain. So essentially, this is, you know, confusing in terms of, you know, exactly what was produced and how it affected him. But Nick Pope, who I've actually interviewed on this show before, he's a researcher who spent several years investigating UFOs as an employee at the Ministry of Defense. He said, quote, "I think this development is hugely significant, whatever you believe about UFOs." He said, "One moment, the U.S. government was saying that nothing happened. But the next, John Burroughs and his attorney get a hold of formerly classified reports that says John was probably irradiated by something in Rendlesham Forest," end quote. So put all that together, okay? We're talking about a guy who saw this craft, who was close enough to it to be exposed to something, and wouldn't get the assistance he needed until he found a document that is no longer classified acknowledging that he was subjected to something. Amazing de facto admission by the U.S. government with money behind it that there is something very tangible about these things and what they can do to you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you some more breaking news about the UFO phenomenon. In fact, did you see what President Barack Obama said about the UFO phenomenon recently on television? If not, we'll get into that when we return. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Telepath messages through the vast unknown. Please close your eyes and concentrate with every thought you think. Upon the recitation we're about to say, calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary most extraordinary craft.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you may and you should call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. Why should you do that? Well, I'll tell you, because honestly, simply, it is the place that turns your money into more money, okay? And who doesn't want to do that? It's simple. You'd be stupid not to do it. I do it. My friends do it. My family does it. The people I care about do it. Take the paper that you have in your wallet and turn it in to real gold and silver, and then you have something that's tangible, that has intrinsic value, and something that you will be confident will retain that value and grow in value as it always has since the beginning of time. Again, that number to Wright's Coin Shop, where you can call and talk directly to Miss Shelley Wright in person, is 828-298-5402. There's also a link to their shop at speakingofstrange.com. So last segment, of course, I was telling you, hey, it's amazing. The U.S. Veterans Administration has finally acknowledged the UFO phenomenon by paying out to treat a U.S. serviceman who was affected negatively by radiation of some kind that came from a UFO. I mean, talk about a whole new arena of credibility to the UFO phenomenon. Well, it's interesting how all this times out, because just recently I was watching Jimmy Kimmel Live, and he was Jimmy Kimmel was interviewing President Barack Obama. And one of the cool things about Jimmy Kimmel, if I were in his position, I'd do the same thing. He always asks these presidential figures about UFOs. I remember him asking Bill Clinton about it, and Bill Clinton had a really interesting response. So he said to Jimmy Kimmel said to Obama, you know, what's the deal with the UFOs? He essentially said, if I were the president, I would run straight to the UFO files, and I would try to figure out, you know, what was going on. And Obama got this big grin on his face, and he said, well, that's why you'll never be president. And then Obama said, now, you can question whether or not this is just a joke. He said, quote, the aliens won't let it happen. He said, you'd reveal all their secrets. They exercise strict control over us. End quote. And then President Clinton, of course, once said he checked on this and found nothing. Kimmel protested. And then Obama said, quote, that's what we're instructed to say, end quote. So, you know, again, there's no way for you to honestly tell the difference between the President of the United States joking around on this matter, which of course would be the only way you could handle it, whether it's true or not, versus this man who is nearing the end of his second term taking an opportunity to actually say something true, plainly and blatantly there before the American public, but, you know, say it with a grin and a chuckle. And so, again, how do you know if he's telling the truth or not? Did either of you happen to see that clip or the interview when it aired, Sam or Shelley?
I have not. I was on Hulu last night, but I passed out before I was able to watch it. It was queued up. Mm-hmm. I passed out. I did not see it.
I didn't see it yet.
Yeah. So, you know, again, there's no way we'll ever know the difference. But, of course, I tend to think, and I think that some of the comments that Bill Clinton has made would also support the idea that the president, as we all know, especially in this day and age, is just a puppet-type figure who just passes through. Everybody knows elected officials, they're there to be the superficial facade, and they're going to come and they're going to go, and therefore there's no reason to invest them with any of these deep secrets that truly affect national security. They're public relations officials, and therefore they themselves are a risk to national security because they are always talking to so many people all the time. John Podesta is also in the news regarding UFOs. John Podesta's last day at the White House on February the 13th, he's been a longtime presidential counselor. He's going off now to chair, they think, the 2016 Democratic campaign. But he has continued talking about the UFO significance. He sent a tweet and he said, quote, "Finally, my biggest failure of 2014, once again, not securing the disclosure of the UFO files to the public," end quote. Now, John Podesta is not being funny about this. His position on this issue is not exactly news. He has presented himself for years as a staunch proponent of open government. He has publicly previously called for the release of any government files on UFOs, or he often calls them UAPs, which are unidentified aerial phenomena. He was the chief of staff for Bill Clinton, and he pressed for Executive Order 12958, which declassified broad categories of information formerly withheld on the grounds of national security. Now, in 2002, he began publicly supporting what became a landmark Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, and it was really targeted toward NASA because he believed they had been stonewalling and refusing to release records regarding this 1965 UFO incident in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Now, you probably heard of that, or you know that ought to ring some kind of a bell. Many witnesses describe seeing a fireball in the evening sky followed by a controlled landing and the systematic military recovery of a spacecraft-like object that was rushed away on the back of a flatbed truck. And now it was widely reported by the local radio and newspapers. U.S. military personnel cordoned off the area, investigated the site, and left without ever providing a full report of the incident other than to just dismiss it as a meteor. And so, you know, John Podesta is one of these people who has been very ingrained in the government system, who is trying to get the word out there, but it's just not happening. Let me read one more story also before we have to go to our next break. Here is a story about the Large Hadron Collider. And, you know, when it comes to these issues regarding UFOs and how they operate and why they're here, it always makes you wonder, are we humans finding new little glimpses through technology and experimentation that are giving us insight into how they might operate? Well, here's a headline, Large Hadron Collider Could Detect Extra Dimensions. I tell you what, let me take this break, and when we come back, I'll read this story to you, and then I also want to talk a little bit about the Brown Mountain Lights, because there is a new program out there about Brown Mountain that's very interesting. I hope you'll check out. And I have a guy who just sent me a fresh Brown Mountain Lights report that I'm going to share with you. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the paranormal, the downright weird. It's presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. My name is Joshua P. Warren, and this program is called Speaking of Strange.
Yeah, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and you are listening to Speaking of Strange. And I want to remind all of you, especially those of you who maybe are tuning in just now and you haven't heard this yet, there is a collection of amazing free images that you can see on my website. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There's a lot of good stuff there, but there's a section in the menu, and it's called Gallery of the Strange. And when you click that link to Gallery of the Strange, you'll be able to look at the world's wildest ghost photos, handpicked by me. You'll be able to look at imagery of UFOs and USOs. Information is there on psychic phenomena, on tulpas. And there's also a little section at the bottom, if you are so bold, called the rabbit hole. And if you click on the rabbit hole and you just jump in there, you're going to see a mix of really wild stuff.
What was that one that you were talking about? It was like an Easter egg.
Yeah. There might be a little Easter egg in there. Right, Shelley?
So you say.
Yeah, there might be some Easter eggs hidden around. So go in, explore, click around.
Click around.
You never know. Yeah, click around. You never know where you're going to end up. JoshuaPWarren.com. And if you forget that, just go to SpeakingOfStrange.com. We'll have a link there for you as well. Listen to this news story about the Hadron Collider. They say here, the Large Hadron Collider. Now, by the way, let me just pause. If you don't know what the Hadron Collider is, well, you should by now. But basically, it's at CERN in Switzerland, and it's pretty much a gigantic circular track that they use just to slam things together really, really, really hard. That's what it basically is. It's a track that's miles and miles long, and they just take two things and they just speed them up and smash them. And then at the moment they smash together and break up into bits, they look at all the little bits and they try to look and see if there's a new bit that they didn't know about before.
It's really just high-tech redneck stuff.
It really is.
Just smashing stuff together.
Yeah, it's like take a potato gun, turn it into a tube that is circular, and blow something up inside of it. That's it. That's what they're spending billions of dollars on. It says here, they are right now thinking that they're going to make a discovery here that is going to put their previous triumph, the Higgs boson particle, in the dust. In this new paper, these scientists are saying that they think the experiments they're working on right now could detect mini black holes, M-I-N-I, as in miniature, mini black holes. Now, such a finding would be a matter of huge significance on its own, but it may be an indication of even more important things. Let me stop for a second before I go on here. Is everything cool here on the air?
We had a little accident.
Have a little accident. Sorry.
Sorry.
Okay. I heard a little mini Hadron Collider explosion.
I accidentally squirted Shelly in the face with some Biotene mouth spray from all the way across the studio.
Yeah, it got my mouth, too.
It tastes pretty good, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels minty, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yes,
I thought
did.
I was just joking. I didn't expect for it to, like, Hadron Collider explode out of the bottle and, like, make it over to Shelly in, like, a tenth of a second.
It really did.
It was really, sorry about that.
There's something really filthy about that. I don't know how to put it into words. And maybe
it would have been pretty funny because I'm sitting over here in the producer's chair. She's all the way over yonder, and I'm like, oh, I'll just spray this. And it's like, oh, ah.
So let me get this straight. 1 minute, I am taking our audience on this super intellectual, deep conversation into extra dimensions and physics.
Uh-huh.
In the meantime, you're mouth spurting across the studio
food
into Shelley's mouth.
Right into her mouth.
Minty fresh. Yep.
It could have been worse.
Oh, it could have been a lot worse.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Shelley. I didn't mean to.
I think
you did?
The FCC requires me to apologize to all of you listening at this point. It's part of my responsibility.
But on the plus side, my mouth has been moisturized by the Biotene mouth spray. So,
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Let's forget that ever happened.
Sorry.
So, yeah, what I was going to say is that, I told you all I have a new book coming out, and it comes out this summer, and I can't give you all the details on it yet. But the book is dedicated to Charles Yost, who was my friend and mentor. He is no longer with us, but he was a NASA Hall of Fame scientist. And I remember having had numerous conversations with Charles Yost about the idea of black holes. And he was essentially saying that when you look into an atom and you have all of these tiny little particles, what we call subatomic particles, that just disappear and kind of seem to be popping in and out of reality as we know it, it almost seems like that there are tiny little, and I'm talking so tiny you can hardly imagine, little black holes within every single atom. So as opposed to, you know, a black hole being some giant thing that's somewhere out there in the cosmos, maybe black holes are an integral part of the fabric of reality itself, and that every molecule in your body is actually sort of attached to black holes, and that's where information is popping in and out. And now we come back to this news story where it essentially seems to indicate the same thing that these authors, these scientists of this paper are saying, there may be mini, M-I-N-I, miniature black holes. And then they go on to say, and listen to this, quote, what we mean is real universes in extra dimensions. And then they go on to say, quote, as gravity can flow out of our universe into the extra dimensions, such a model can be tested by the detection of miniature black holes at the Large Hadron Collider, end quote. So what essentially we're seeing here is more and more evidence that this world that we call the real world is just, at very least, one side of a screen, and that the other side of the screen is just as active and vibrant. And this is if we only are talking about a screen that has two sides. It's probably a screen that has many more than two sides. And things are switching back and forth. That said, let me jump a little bit here to the Brown Mountain lights. Because you have places on planet Earth, like Brown Mountain, where lights just seem to appear out of nowhere. We don't know where they come from, and we don't know where they go. We don't know what their power supply is. Is it possible that places like Brown Mountain are just places that are highly visible representations of this energy that's sort of being transferred back and forth? Well, there is a new program that was produced. It's an episode of Carl White's Life in the Carolinas that aired on certain stations in Western North Carolina recently about the Brown Mountain lights. It's about 30 minutes. It took him 2 or 3 years to put it together. I am in this program. And if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll find a link to the show so you can watch it. Also, you can go to brownmountainlights.com and watch it. And I highly recommend that you do it. It's really well done, and it's got new stuff that you've never seen before. But when we come back from this break, I want to read to you an email that I just got yesterday from a man who had an experience with the Brown Mountain Lights. And I think you'll enjoy this. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. Brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 hour. And that is when we are in safe harbor, meaning that we can talk about some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff, often more sordid and seedy. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. Some of you will want to stick around for that. Some of you will not, okay? But if that sounds like your cup of tea and you want to hear us get a little more raw, well, stay for the Dark 30 hour coming up next. So I was telling you that Life in the Carolinas aired a program about the Brown Mountain Lights that was really good, and they talked to some forest rangers, and they had some, you know, groundbreaking imagery that I don't think had ever been put on TV before, and they did some computer animations and stuff like that. We're going to have that linked up for you for now at speakingofstrange.com. You can also go to brownmountainlights.com to see that. But here's an interesting email I got, and I thought it was cool because it just seems like such a quintessential Brown Mountain Lights experience, and it was sent to me by a man named his name's Bill. I won't use his last name, but he saw the Life in the Carolinas segment, and then he emailed me, and he said that this was 1998. He said he went up to Wiseman's View, one of the best overlooks there, with three of his friends. And I'm just going to read the email. He says, after carrying enough firewood down to Wiseman's View, along with some marshmallows, we got the campfire going, and we waited to possibly view the lights. The weather was forecast to deteriorate a bit later that evening, with some light rain moving in. But when we arrived, about 9 p.m., it started to rain more. We started to pack everything up, and we got ready to leave about 11:30 p.m. He goes on to say, he had been there 30 times before and never seen anything, and so he was chalking up trip number 31 as, once again, no brown mountain lights. He says, we made sure our fire was completely out, gathered our possessions, and with heads down, made our way back to the Wiseman's View parking area. And he's talking to his friends there for a while, and he says, after talking in the parking lot for about a half hour, I realized I'd left my hatchet where we'd been sitting. He said, by now, some light rain was definitely falling, and rocks tend to become very slippery in the rain, so one of his friends agreed to walk back with him. He says, I don't know if it was fate or good luck or what, but after finding my hatchet, we stood there for a bit, and in the chasm between Hawksbill and Table Rock, I thought I saw a light appear and move up and around a bit before disappearing. It had a red-orange hue to it. I didn't say anything at first, and neither did my friend. And then another light seemed to rise up from Brown Mountain. This one had a greenish color, and it maneuvered itself in a manner similar to the first one. This time, we both said to each other, did you see that? And we were sort of discounting the fact that there were these famed Brown Mountain lights right in front of us. He says he always thought they were seen during periods of dry weather, but let me just jump in here and say, no, he was there perfect time when there was a little moisture. Anyway, he goes on to say, then, man, there goes another one, rising up from an indistinct area on the other side. And then another red-orange colored light. It rose up, hovered for a bit, dipped down, then disappeared. He said, we stood there quite oblivious to the fact the rain was picking up for 5 to 10 more minutes before deciding the show was over. It says, the show then picked up again, and we saw several lights of various colors go through the same acrobatics as the other ones have. Rise up, move around a bit, dip down, move around again, disappear. He said, to put a number on how many lights we saw that night, well, we'd be confident saying we saw at least 20. He said, took me 31 trips before I finally saw them. And folks, let me remind you again, if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find more information on that, or you can go to brownmountainlights.com and see them as well. Always nice to get some report from somebody who has seen something like that. And you can email me your stories, and if they're good enough, I'll read them on the air. When we come back, it'll be time for the Dark 30 Hour. I am Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. This is Speaking of Strange.